The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
And once we have his final word, you'll see that for roughly 53 seconds, he is completely silent and virtually motionless with just sporadic movements. You're going to learn those sporadic movements matter greatly in this case because what they reflect. Mr. Floyd was no longer breathing when he's making these movements. You will learn about something in this case called an anoxic seizure. It is the body's automatic reflex when breathing has stopped due to oxygen deprivation.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon. Just some of the prosecution there in George Floyd's case. That is a case that I know the entire nation will be watching. I hope that peace and civility will ensue. It begun today. I'll give you some sound from what's now unfolding, just so you're in the know. But let me just say hello. It's good to be back with you. I mean that, too. It really is good to hang out with you again, and we've got 3 hours. Today, we are 33 days away from guess what? 33 days, can you guess? From the feast of St. Joseph the Worker. And this is the year dedicated to St. Joseph by our great Pope, right? Have you done a St. Joseph consecration yet? If you haven't, today is the day to begin. I've done a Marian consecration. I've done one to Divine Mercy. I tried to get through the other St. Joseph one, but I actually kind of dropped the ball on it. A lot was going on in my life, and I'm going to pick it up today. So you can always join me, and we'll make our connection to St. Joseph the Worker. He's actually reached out to me, too. I mean, there's, you know, I'll have to share that story with you coming up a little bit later. But we'll talk about that. I'll get you plugged in. And there's a new movie out called The Unholy. It's a blasphemous film that attacks the Blessed Virgin Mary. I think it's going to be released on Holy Week. I'm just hearing of it as I'm sitting in my chair. My crack team of producers will be diving into it. I'll give you some perspective on that, along with these sneakers that they're only selling 666 pairs of. And that glorify Satan. Have you heard about that? Yeah, horrible. I'll fill you in on those details. And, of course, a lot more all coming up here right now. But it's Palm Sunday, right? Palm Sunday came. We're now into Holy Week. Yesterday, you know, I know you probably went and received your palms and prayed. That was not the case for Sacred Heart Cathedral in Makassar. It's the capital of South Sulawesi. It's a province in Indonesia. And I've been reporting on these incidences. I just want you to know, I want you to see the scope of what's happening, not just in our country, but around the world. As the faithful were leaving that celebration, as they were coming out of Mass yesterday, two guys on a motorbike drive up to the main entrance. They were turned back by security guards, according to the National Catholic Register. Then they drove around to the other entrance, and their bomb went off. It blew up. It injured 14 of the prisoners who were leaving the cathedral. The two bombers were instantly killed. And Makassar is actually the fifth largest metropolitan area in Indonesia, which is the world's most populous Muslim-majority country. So there were three similar bombings back in 2018 in a different city. So let's pray for our church, please. The faithful who are being persecuted all over the world. And you could just see how Satan hates the church. He hates it. He hates the Catholic Church. You see it in the vandalism we see, in the destruction. You see it how he attacks our priests. You see it in so many different ways. These movies that now are going to come out to defame the most pure one, the Virgin Mary. I mean, that's satanic. That's demonic. That's dark. And who in their right mind would want to sell sneakers with human blood and pentagrams and other satanic imagery? Why would you want to wear that type of thing? We'll talk about that a little bit later. I'm going to have somebody stop by and give us some perspective. Because my philosophy is this. Just as sacramentals, you know, I think they are powerful in terms of protection. Blessed water and blessed salt and St. Benedict medals, miraculous medals. Just as they ward off evil, I think they can also, those satanic images and symbols can do quite the opposite. They can do the inverse. Anyway, just food for thought. We'll dive into that a little bit later. But the trail right now for, you know, the truth is underway. Let's say that. You know, Derek Chauvin, who was the man who was seen all over the world with his knee on George Floyd's neck, faces three different charges in his death, including second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. And each charge, of course, carries a different level of proof. It's got to be made in order to reach that type of conviction. So the defense counsel was worried, look, his case is way too popular. Who's not going to know about this case or saw that image? And there's going to be a tainted jury pool, especially after the city reached a $27 million settlement with the Floyd family before the trial even started, before a conviction was reached. And that itself, the optics of that communicate a very powerful message. So too many potential jurors that looked like, you know, for them, it looked like an admission of guilt on the part of the city. Why would you give a family $27 million unless something was wrong, right? So the area where George Floyd's death took place has been turned into a so-called sanctuary where police and other authorities are not welcome. And it's been a major problem for the residents there. It's not clear how long the trial is going to last. But Matthew Frank, he serves as the prosecution against Derek Chauvin. And here's what he said when he was asked what the defense should not be arguing. Listen.
And can you give an example of what you think should not be said?
That Mr. Floyd was trying or wanted to resist arrest, that he was trying to fight with the officers intentionally, that he was faking or malingering his medical distress. Those are the types of things that relate directly to his subjective state of mind.
All right, so that's the prosecution. The defense counsel, a guy named Eric Nelson, he argued pertaining to the death of George Floyd. He explained why he does not believe that he actually died of asphyxiation. Listen.
You will learn ultimately that Mr. Floyd was transported to the emergency department at Hennepin County. Efforts to save Mr. Floyd were made at the direction of Dr. Bradford Wonkeed Langenfeld. Again, he took important tests. He ran blood samples and blood gas samples. He took certain very important, obtained very important pieces of information. And you will learn that later that evening Mr. Floyd was pronounced dead. The evidence will show then that Dr. Andrew Baker of the Hennepin County Medical Examiner's Office conducted the only autopsy of Mr. Floyd. And you will hear of several interviews that Dr. Baker had with law enforcement where he discusses the cause and manner of death and what that actually means according to what he saw present in Mr. Floyd's body. And some of this evidence is extremely important to the final determination of Mr. Floyd's cause of death. The medical findings include things such as the blood gas test that was taken at HCMC that revealed Mr. Floyd had an exceptionally high level of carbon dioxide. Dr. Baker found none of what are referred to as the telltale signs of asphyxiation. There were no bruises to Mr. Floyd's neck, either on his skin or after peeling his skin back to the muscles beneath. There was no petechial hemorrhaging. There was no evidence that Mr. Floyd's airflow was restricted, and he did not determine to be a positional or mechanical asphyxia death.
You know, the real problem with all of this, and look, you and I know we just want the truth. If Chauvin kneeling on his neck caused him to stop breathing, then he should go to jail for that, right? There should be consequence. If George Floyd died from some other reason, well, it does change things. However, you know, cities burned. Riots took place across the country because of the optics of what was seen there. I mean, it looked horrible. All these uniformed police officers kneeling on a handcuffed man and one man having his knee on his neck. I mean, so that is what people saw. And, you know, of course, the reaction, all of us felt the same way. Initially, it's like, But the bottom line is, look, if I was in the shoes of Chauvin or anyone else, you know, we want truth. That's the beauty of our country. We want justice. We're not a nation of vigilantes. And if this man did something that was wrong, and yes, let's hope that a jury of his peers will determine that based on the evidence and a just verdict will be rendered. Ben Crump is the attorney for the Floyd family, and he made this statement before the trial began.
Everybody, please do not be distracted The facts are simple. What killed George Floyd was an overdose of excessive force.
Come on, bro.
The transcript from the autopsies are clear. The manner and cause of death was asphyxiation by homicide. Felonis said in the hood, they choked. It was a knee choke. And so let's remember the facts here. This murder case is not hard. Just look at the torture video of George Floyd.
And again, let's hope that the truth and a just verdict comes through. I want to be very impartial on this, and we will see ultimately what comes out. The jury is comprised right now of 9 women, 5 men. A third of them are black, 29% black, 14 of mixed race, 57% white. I would love to know how that jury selection went down, but we'll see how that all shakes out. And again, look, you and I, we live in the greatest nation in the world. We want justice, right? We want justice. And, the facts hopefully will bear that out. I'll keep you abreast of what happens in the days ahead. Let's just pray. You know, we can get ahead of this curve, too. Pray for peace. I don't want to see more buildings burn. I don't want to see more people injured. I don't want to see more rioting. I don't want to see more arson. I don't want to see more chaos. I don't like the message it sends to the rest of the world, too, when other people are genuinely being oppressed and their religious freedoms muted. And they look at the U.S. now and say, how can you be a torchbearer on this cause? Look what's happening in your own country. So let's pray. Pray, pray. One other just weird story here, and I'll throw this out to you, and then I want to talk also about what's happening within the church. You know, I don't even know how to begin with this story. It's getting a lot of attention. As you know, the Northern Hemisphere, it's starting to get into warmer weather, right? I don't know where your weather is. Well, the Microsoft founder, multi-billionaire Bill Gates, has an idea to cool the Earth's temperature. He's paying for an experiment that's going to be launched from Kiruna. That's the northernmost town of Sweden. And the Harvard-done study is going to release a high-altitude balloon. They're going to be carrying about 4.5 pounds of chalk, 12 miles into the stratosphere. Listen to this report. They'll explain why he wants to explode chalk into the atmosphere.
Bill Gates is backing the first high-altitude experiment of one radical climate change solution, creating a massive chemical cloud that could cool the Earth. It's called solar geoengineering, and it's highly controversial.
How long will it be that countries keep experiencing these climate impacts before someone gets desperate and says, hey, we need to cool the planet with solar geoengineering?
It would look something like this. Thousands of planes would fly very high and use nozzles to inject millions of tons of light-reflecting particles into the stratosphere. It would create a thin chemical cloud of those particles around the whole planet, blocking some sunlight from reaching the surface. It would mimic a giant volcanic eruption, which we know cools the Earth. Back in 1991, Mount Pinatubo erupted in the Philippines. It was the largest eruption to affect a densely populated area, creating avalanches and giant mud flows that left more than 700 dead and 30,000 homeless. It also spewed a cloud of 20 million tons of sulfur dioxide particles into the stratosphere. That chemical cloud was hundreds of miles across and reflected about 2% of sunlight back to space. And in 1992, the Earth was cooler than in 1991.
That is part of the mechanism, but you do this in a controlled way.
Modeling studies have found that it could reduce the intensity of heat waves, for instance. It could reduce the rate of sea level rise. It could reduce the intensity of tropical storms.
But it also comes with significant risks and uncertainties.
Things like mass famine, mass flooding, drought, of kinds that will affect very large populations.
And that's something that really has got to be considered. I mean, again, just to give you the thumbnail on this story, and then I want to change gears. They're going to release chalk into the stratosphere. It's going to interact with whatever else is up there, and they're hoping that this will shield the Earth from the sun's rays. And the idea is that they want to send a lot more chalk up there to cool the Earth. And of course, my personal takeaway from this, when I first heard it, who gave Harvard or Bill Gates the authority to do this kind of experimentation that will affect the entire planet. I don't remember ever being asked to vote on it or any other country on Earth, whether they chimed in on this or not. But we'll see what happens. We've talked about seeding of clouds in the past, but can we possibly cool the climate, and do we need to? We've had many people debate that issue on the air in the past. The Earth has gone through cycles in the past. Are we seeing climate change due to man, or is this a cycle of nature and solar activity? And can we be making a mistake by doing this? I hope they learn a lot from the experiment. I hope they're judicious in how they decide to move forward. Hey, I want to talk about what's happening in the church here, too, because I only have a few minutes, and Carl Olson's going to be stopping by. There's an event developing right now in Germany. And just to give you a little history here before I tell you what's going on with the German bishops, there have been times when the church has split. And what we call the term for that is schism. And the first major one happened in 1054. You probably know that. That's where our Orthodox brothers in the Catholic Church split. They went their own way. And then it took another 500 years before that happened again. We had Martin Luther, right? He went and posted those 95 theses on the doors of the Wittenberg Church there in Germany. And those theses at the time in Germany countered that. Look, he was seeing a serious abuse happening in the church at the time, the selling of indulgences, and it led to the Protestant Reformation, the splintering of the church from Luther all the way down. Calvin, you go through the whole litany of things. How many thousands of little denominations do you have today? But since then, the Catholic Church has had some further splintering, but not in major ways. You've had the Lefebvreist split in 1988, and unfortunately, that was sad, but it's being healed today, so thank God for that. But we could be seeing something really major right now, and I'm not saying this is going to happen. I just want to put my finger on the pulse of it. Here's what's happening. We talked about it a little bit last week. The church in Germany is going through what they say is a synodal process. So they're having the synod, right? And they are questioning just about every major moral and anthropological teaching of the Catholic Church. Unfortunately, a very real possibility that they could just decide to take off on their own looms. There was a document from the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith on the church's inability. Let me underline that word, the inability of the church to bless same-sex couples, right? We talked about that, I think, last week or the week before when it came out. The Holy Father shocked a lot of people. They didn't realize he would say this, but yeah, he supported that. And that document, articulating once again the church's view and our call to love those with same-sex couples, was aimed right at the German church. And the CDF got some very strong pushback from priests around the world, even the German bishops. So I've invited Carl Olson to join me today. He's the editor of Catholic World Report. He's the author of Called to Be the Children of God. And you can check him out in all of his books. Just go to CatholicWorldReport.com. And I think last year, we spoke about, did Jesus really rise from the dead? I'm going to invite him back to deal with that as well. But, Carl, thank you for joining me. It's always good to have you here.
Hey, Drew. Yeah, it's always interesting to talk about the shock that people throw out there when the Catholic Church, via the Catholic Pope, upholds Catholic teaching, right? I mean, people, why are people surprised? But I think it does get to the heart of some of the situation that you've outlined there, in Germany, that there's this expectation that things are going to be able to change, and they aren't. So things are coming to a head, as you've kind of intimated.
So, I'm sure the German bishops are doing this out of a position of love, compassion. I don't know whether it's political rightness, I don't know.
But to be serious, and I understand this is really about, a lot of this is about money, and a lot of this is about power, right? Yeah, so the Catholic Church, as you all know, and I'm sure you've had this topic broached on your show, they bring in $7.5 billion a year through the church tax. So if you are a registered Catholic in Germany, you automatically have 8-9% of your income taxed by the church. And the only way to get out of that is to actually formally leave a Catholic Church, in which case you no longer have access to the sacraments, etc. So I think part of what's happening, and drawing here upon the work of my really good friend Christopher Altieri over at the Catholic Herald, who's done some really great stuff on this, what you have is the bishops, many of them, we should emphasize, this is not all the Catholic bishops in Germany. There are several who are standing up against this, but many of them are trying to navigate kind of this ecclesiastical game of chicken in which they, on one hand, are posturing to the Catholics still in the church in Germany and saying, hey, look, we're going to reform, we're going to change, we're making all these, you know, positive changes within the church. And of course, these involve things like ordination of, pushing for the ordination of women, blessing of same-sex, you know, couples, et cetera, et cetera. And at the same time saying, no, we're part of the universal church. There's no way we're going to leave the universal church. Right. You know, that's not going to happen. At some point, in some way, this has to come to a head. Certainly, the CDF document of a couple of weeks ago was part of that, and there's no doubt about it. I mean, Pope Francis signed off on it. I was not as shocked as some people were that he would do this. I think that even though I've been critical of Pope Francis, this does not surprise me that he put his stamp of approval on the CDF document. A lot of this comes down to money. They want to have the money keep in, but the problem is, to sum up, the church there is hemorrhaging so bad that it's going to be gone within 20 to 40 years. So they're trying to... You know, they're trying to placate its current membership is what's happening in part.
So to that point, and I'm really glad you brought it up because that really is the heart of this issue here. But moral teaching is also just moral teaching. And for I think it was Cardinal Schönborn who says, no, he wants to bless the same-sex unions. And maybe that's different than marriage. I don't know if what he's saying is intended differently to say that, oh, no, this is a legitimate sacrament. I mean, he's not saying that, is he? What's Schönborn's position on this?
Well, my understanding, and I was frankly deeply disappointed to read his remarks on this.
Yeah, me too.
But he's been going down this road for a while, unfortunately, and I think it's very unfortunate because I believe he's absolutely wrong on this. The one thing I would highlight in his statement is that he really blurs a key distinction between blessing individuals and blessing quote unquote same sex unions. You're speaking very strictly from the perspective of the church, there is really no such thing as a same-sex union.
Right.
The union we're talking about here is the marital union, and it only exists between a man and a woman, etc. This is, you know, this has been church teaching. It always has been. This shouldn't be shocking to people, but apparently it is. And so, but I think Cardinal Schönborn, he blurs these lines, and so he kind of goes back and forth, but there has to be a clear distinction. Someone can be blessed. A person who says that they're, you know, homosexual, says they're gay, can be blessed, and that is totally fine in the eyes of the church, but what's being blessed is the person, and the blessing imparts, is meant to impart upon them, you know, an additional grace and power to live the way they should live. I mean, every single one of us, obviously, are sinners. We all need the blessing of the church. We need the graces that come through blessings and through the sacraments. And of course, there are guidelines and rules for those things. I mean, things like, you know, not receiving, you know, communion when you're grave sin, et cetera. But to say that you're going to bless a same-sex union is an ontological unreality. It can't happen because it doesn't exist. In the eyes of the church, there is no such thing per se. So, you know, I think Schönborn really blurs that. And I think, honestly, Drew, he's making a sentimental appeal, and I think a problematic.
Hey, Carl, you got a minute? Stay with me one more minute, and we'll pick it up on the other side. If you want to join us, I only have a few moments with Carl Olson as we're taking a look at what looms for the church in Germany. We are a universal church. Let's pray for them as well for some clarity. I mean, division, the hallmark of the evil one. Stay with me. When we come back, I'll also tell you about these satanic sneakers that are for sale. Wait till you hear this.
Most of what's in the Mass can be found in the Bible. Hi, this is Father Rocky with our 35th lesson on the Mass. It's true, almost every word in the Mass can be traced back to the Bible, like the Lamb of God prayer right before Holy Communion. In Latin, we call it the Agnus Dei. And it calls to mind that electric moment when John the Baptist pointed to Jesus at the Jordan River and exclaimed, "Behold, the Lamb of God!" Immediately, John and Andrew began to follow Jesus, who, turning around, surprised them by asking, "What are you looking for?" Indeed, what are you looking for? We say, "Lamb of God, who takes away the sins of the world, have mercy on us, grant us peace," because that's what the heart and soul seek, peace and repose from all worry and anxiety and remorse for our own sinfulness. Prayer is one of the pillars of Lent, and the Mass is the greatest prayer of all. Please join me for Mass weekdays at noon Central.
And join us for Class After Mass. It's The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That is Old Time Road. Jake, is that the name of the tune?
Yeah, Old Time Road.
Old Time Road. And who else? Billy Cyrus is in that too, right?
Billy Ray Cyrus. Yeah, you know the achy breaky heart guy. He did the chorus in the song.
That was,
a huge hit.
That was Lil Nas. I mean, that's a catchy tune, of course. Mm-hmm. Coming up in a few minutes, I'll fill you in on the latest. The entertainer there, Lil Nas, he has come out with Satan shoes. They have human blood in them. And they have satanic images. They're selling 666 of these shoes. I'll fill you in on all the details. In fact, we'll be joined by a priest who's involved in deliverance ministry, and I do want to take a look at what happens. Just as sacramentals, you know, there's a certain power in holy water and blessed salt, and we see them used in exorcisms, and we know how holy water can remit venial sin. What does satanic imagery and spells and incantations and other things do? Does it draw darkness to the individual? We'll look at that and a whole lot more coming up. Just to give you some clarity, right now, if you're joining me, though, just putting our finger on the finger of what's going on in the church. And as I said, speaking of Satan, I mean, his hallmark is division, right? He loves to divide. He loves to do that. Look at the fallout over what happened with Luther. Look where we are now. Look at the split in 1054. There's a bishop who, a cardinal who, for a while, I thought was really a straight arrow. He is the Archbishop of Vienna. His name's Cardinal Schönborn. And he's come out and made a statement, when it comes to same-sex blessings, they're not going to be denied. And he distinguished blessings given to persons from those given to couples or their unions, saying that the church, like a mother, can and should bless persons who seek blessings whenever possible. The Holy Father, when he began his ninth year, came out with this document for the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, and was very clear. And a lot of people said, "Oh my gosh, the Holy Father!" I'm surprised they reacted that way. But I think Pope Francis sometimes is severely misinterpreted. He came out and said the Church has no power to bless same-sex unions. Even Cardinal Blaise Supich, the chief interpreter of the Holy Father's pastoral priorities in the U.S. Episcopate here, said, "Hey, there was nothing new in that CDF document." Yet it created a firestorm in Germany. Hundreds of theologians, a few bishops expressing their disagreement. So I thought, well, where can this lead? Is it possible to see another schism? My guest today is Carl Olson, and he'll probably be joining me again next week. He's the author of a wonderful book, Did Jesus Really Rise from the Dead? Something you might want to read on this Lent and as we enter into the new year. He's been following this very closely, and he brought up a couple of great points. He talked about the money, the church in Germany, and the connection to the government and a church tax. And Carl, I just want to pick up on that point here before, you know, we run out of too much time here. If the state, if it stopped sending that money to the church, what would happen? I mean, is there a way to disengage the church from the state, from this flow of money? And how do you think that would change attitudes amongst the episcopate?
Well, I'll put it really bluntly, and this is my opinion, but I think this is accurate, that I think if the German church did not have the money, it would not be relevant. And I think that part of what they're trying to do is they're trying to remain relevant, and they're not relevant in the realm of being Orthodox, right, or having a robust church or having evangelistic endeavors that are successful, or et cetera. I mean, you compare the church in Germany, say, to the church in places like Hungary or Poland or other places, and it's just a completely different story, right? So the church in Germany is desperate to stay relevant. It's only able to do that to a large degree because it has so much monetary clout. And so it's using that. But meanwhile, it's hemorrhaging members. And really, within a matter of, it's not going to be that long, a generation or two generations at this rate, it's not going to exist at all. So as I mentioned earlier, I think this is kind of a big game of ecclesiastical chicken. And yeah, I think for the German church, this obviously bodes very, very badly, because in the end, the money will run out and the clout will run out, because there is no vitality in jettisoning Orthodox truth.
Yep.
It's just going to And as they found out, Pope Francis isn't going to go for it either. I mean, so on both ends, they're going to lose.
Hey, we have a moment or two left. I think it's important to define our terms, too. People hear the term schism. They hear the word heresy.
Yeah.
Define those and maybe draw the distinction between the two.
Yeah, so, the Code of Canon Law and the Catechism have the same definition. Heresy being, quote, the obstinate denial or obstinate doubt about the after the reception of baptism of some truth which is to be believed by divine and Catholic faith. So that's like saying, hey, I don't believe, for example, that the Blessed Mother is virgin or that Jesus Christ is not actually, I don't believe that he's a savior or something like that, right? Schism is, quote, the refusal of submission to the supreme pontiff or of communion with the members of the church subject to him. So this is really about governance and being and submitting to what the Holy Father, declares in certain ways. And obviously there's qualifying aspects to some of these things. But I think we see both aspects, I think, in play with what's going on in Germany, especially as the theologians and various bishops there are really pushing for ordination of women, blessing of same-sex marriages, being more open about accepting homosexuality, saying homosexuality is fine, et cetera. And so I think both of these things are on the table. One really has to do more with doctrine. One has to do more with power and authority. But, of course, the two in the end are very closely related to one another.
Yeah. Well, Carl, thank you for the clarity and the perspective. And let's talk next week. Your book is a wonderful read. I know people can also follow you at Catholic World Report, a wonderful website with great information and great publication. So keep up your good work, okay? And thanks for making time for us today.
Thanks, Drew. My pleasure.
Have a blessed Holy Week. That's Carl Olson. Check him out, Catholic World Report. His book, Did Jesus Really Rise from the Dead? Definitely going to get him on next week. We'll talk about that with him coming up. Time is the enemy here. It goes so quick, doesn't it? It goes so fast. There's so much to talk about. The vision. We're seeing it in the country. We are seeing it within the church. You might be seeing it in your family or in your workplace. It's the hallmark of the evil one. Let's pray for unity. Blessed are the peacemakers, right? Isn't that what Christ said? Let's try to bring unity. We live in a time, I believe personally, of great diabolic disorientation. What is right is now wrong. What is wrong is now right. Everything is reversed. And you see that today. Whoever thought that, Satan would be in vogue, the purveyor of death, the person who is the enemy of your soul, the entity that's the enemy of your soul. It's become a ritual right now of the mainstream culture every year around Easter to come up with some way to try to draw people away from the truth of who Jesus is and what he did for us. You see it all the time. You see these documentaries that are done speaking to experts about how Jesus had sexual relations with Mary Magdalene or he didn't rise from the dead or, whatever, right? The gospel of the so-and-so was just discovered. It's a deception. There's a movie coming out. We'll talk about that coming up a little bit later on the Virgin Mary called, Jake, what was the title of that movie? An Unholy Union? What was it?
I believe it was called The Unholy.
The Unholy. Again, an attack on Our Lady. Every year, there's some major story or publication or movie that tries to denigrate what our faith is all about. Usually some story about how Jesus is not God or, talking about the Virgin Mary or whatever. This year, it seems the devil's getting fed up with that kind of thing. So guess what? Things are getting a little bit weirder. There's a rapper. His name's Little Nas X, right? Is that
I've always said Little Nas X. But
Nas X?
Maybe Nas X.
He has gone beyond the pale, and he is advancing something that is demonic. This has been going on for centuries, of course. But Little Nas is bringing now into the open. He's pairing up Satan with a pair of sneakers and creating a demand for him. He's only going to produce 666 pairs of these satanic sneakers. And there's Father Rocky. the New York Post reported a little bit earlier today that he's worked with a company called Mischief, MSCHF. And they're going to remake Nike Air Max 97s. They're going to put out this limited edition of the stock of these 666 pairs. Now, again, I want to qualify. It's not Nike. I think there's probably a middle vendor that purchased these and is doing these. They're embroidered in red. The shoes contain a drop of human blood. I believe I saw a pair of them. I thought one of them had a pentagram on them. And again, is this where the culture is descending to? You know, and Jake, go ahead, open your mic. You can sound off on that too. Go ahead.
Well, it's just also, I guess, important to mention the fact that this Lil Nas, this rapper guy, he is no stranger to controversy, because it was only about, I want to say, 2-3 months ago that he was on a live stream event with some of his fans. And there was this guy, teenage boy, I believe, teenage guy, who said, "I'm pregnant." He said that as a joke. And immediately the rapper Lil Nas just responded back by saying, "Kill it."
Oh, jeez.
Promoting abortion. And then he got, this was actually reported by Live Action with Lila Rose. And I remember the social media storm that erupted from it, where Lil Nas himself was attacking Live Action and Lila Rose for their reporting on the story. So
that's terrible.
It's just, it's evil, demonic.
It is. And it's the perfect way of putting it. And look, bottom line is, don't buy these sneakers, okay? And I don't endorse people who go down that path either, to be honest with you. The satanic isn't just making a comeback. Even in official school curriculum right now, check this story out. California's Board of Education has approved a plan on a so-called ethnic education, which will include having kids chant ancient Aztec mantras, mantras that were used to call on these demonic gods, to whom they then would sacrifice, these gods of death, of bloodlust. They sacrifice tens of thousands of human beings, including human sacrifice of children. And you got the California Board of Education approving a plan. You know, look, this is ethnic education. Yeah, we want your kids. You want your kids chanting to Aztec deities that the Virgin Mary came and dispelled with? She appeared to Juan Diego. This is where we are. Look, I'm not here to bring you down. I'm here just to make you aware of what's happening. It's a call for you and I now more than ever to fast and to pray and to grow in virtue. Believe me, I think Satan's becoming more aggressive. I think in part because he knows his time is limited. I'm joined right now by Father Mark Barron, pastoral minister, administrator for Our Lady of Peace Parish in Darien, Illinois. Very knowledgeable in this area. That's why I've invited him to stop by. Father, good afternoon. It's great to talk with you today.
Hey, good afternoon, Drew. It's great to be back on the show.
Your thoughts, let me just start with that, on satanic sneakers. Crazy. You heard Jake's comments on Lil Nas as well, but give me your thoughts.
Yeah, it was shocking when I first saw it. And it was first shocking because I thought it was Nike, because that's how it was first reported, but right. It's not. It's not Nike doing this. It's this other company. And then reading about it, it was shocking. And then going further into it, though, I kind of find out that he has released a video. This Lil Nas has released a video called Montero, and that video is about himself. Because Lil Nas is a practicing homosexual, and so that this video is about him coming out. And so the song he wrote called Montero. His real name is Montero Lamar Hill. And so he wrote this song to his younger self, and it's basically in response to he made a video for this song, which is a response to people who basically condemned him when he came out, and who condemned him to hell, and who, you know, et cetera, you know, basically saying he's living in league with the devil, whatever. So he made this video that is also bad. I mean, if the shoes are bad, the video, because the video has a lot of demonic content in it as well.
Wow.
But anyway, it seems like this is a reaction to people condemning him for coming out as a gay person, a gay man, a homosexual. And so, but at the same time, even with that, the idea of coming out with it, or when you dance in this area, when you dance in this darkness, it's never a good thing. It's never a good thing to open yourself up to this type of behavior. You never want to, I mean, who knows, maybe he is in league with the devil, like maybe he has given himself the devil, I don't know. Or maybe this is just kind of like a reaction to Christians, etc. But either way, when you do stuff like that, you do open yourself up to the bad spirit.
Yes, you do.
And so this is why. Yeah, I mean, and, you know, the.
Well, Father, I'll tell you, hold the thought. When we come back, we can talk more. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about Lil Nas X's Satan shoes. They contain a human drop of blood and satanic imagery, and they're being sold. Joined by Father Mark Byron. We'll take your calls and questions, too. Chaplain comes up in about 15 minutes. We'll certainly pray for him, too. Stay with me. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Trying to stay up on the headlines? The Drew Mariani Show is here for you.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, 10 minutes before the top of the hour. If you're on hold, I'll do my best to get you on the air. We will also pray the chaplet coming up. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. It is great to be here with you, giving you a look at life and hopefully a moral perspective on that that will help you better understand and know how to navigate some of these issues that you'll hear about, at least maybe how you can talk to others about it. Lil Nas is a rapper, came out with a series of sneakers, a limited edition, 666, and we, you know, people often know that number 666 is associated with the mark of the Antichrist or the beast or the devil. He has a human blood in this. Where he got that, I'm not quite sure. And then, of course, you know, when you get pentagrams, that's the thing that bothered me, really. It's not so much, okay, they're red or you've got a drop of human blood. When you link this directly to something that's satanic, when you put a pentagram on there, when you brush up against evil, and this is how I feel and this is what I believe, it leaves a taint. And I think that's especially true of the occult, whether you're dabbling with mediums or astrology or fortune tellers or pendants or the New Age or whatever, right? Real spirits hover over those who are involved in what the Bible calls witchcraft or sorcery or whatever term you want to do. I would stay a million miles away from this stuff. And I think anybody who promotes it is also opening the door to the occult. We had an exorcist on last week, and he talked about how he used to get, you know, I think it was 6 to 10 calls a month. Now he gets 10 to 13 a day. There were 12 exorcists when he began the ministry in the country here in the States alone. Now there's 125, and there's a shortage of them. He said COVID had really opened the door for this. It's not just our country. We talked about this in Rome and all over. So where there is blatant use and acceptance of the occult, you see a rise in this type of activity. I'm not here to scare you because, look, confession is more powerful than 1,000 exorcisms, you know? God is infinitely more powerful. But if you have a stubborn problem, something that seems intractable, an emotional problem, something, look back. See if there's a cult activity. See if there's some link to that. It's food for thought. I'm joined today by Father Mark Byron. And Father, I want your thought on that, and we'll grab a few calls here very quickly. Just as holy water and sacramentals are very powerful in terms of spiritual protection, brushing up against a cult or wearing sneakers like this or things that have been cursed, what does that do? Is the inverse true?
Yeah, I think that it kind of depends on the disposition of the person. You know, a person who's practicing their faith and in a state of grace generally is protected by stuff like this. However, we can look at it from the standpoint of, you know, the devils are legalistic.
Yep.
And when you encounter a unholy object, a pentagram, the witchcraft star, whatever, and you kind of like bring that into your house in some way, bring that to your person, you are kind of like implicitly saying yes to what it stands for. And in that way, you're kind of like opening the door to what it stands for and to the, in one sense, the power behind it. So, and sometimes a person could take something like that in and like, in one sense, not believe in it, but again, by taking it to their home, whatever, just to like have it as, I don't know why they would do it, but you're still kind of opening the door to it because it, it, it does contain, you know, bad spirits are attached to it oftentimes. And then you're bringing it into your house. And when you, like, let's say, bring it into your house, you're basically implicitly kind of entering into an agreement with it, like that, saying, like, it's okay. You're kind of like opening the door indirectly or even unknowingly by associating yourself with it. And so, again, the devils are legalistic. So they see that as a little crack being opened in the door of your heart. And so in that way, they could kind of, enter in and create some unpleasantness for the person who's associated with it, which is why, nobody should buy the shoes. I mean, nobody should buy the shoes because they're $1,018, number one, and no pair of shoes is worth that much. But at the same time, no one should buy it because of the anagram that's on there. And also because, you know, you don't know. I'm sure you've talked about this on your show where you hear stories about people cursing records or CDs before they send them out and sell them. They do, you know, praying curses over the drugs before they go out and sell them.
Right.
Like cocaine, illegal drugs. And so in the same way, you don't know if, like, somebody prayed curses over these shoes. I mean, they're blatantly dedicated to the devil. So, obviously stay away from them. And stay away from all objects that have occult New Age origin, because you can, again, you're opening the door. You're opening the door of your heart open to something that you don't want to do that to. So.
All right, let's grab a call or two. Time goes so quickly, Father. Lindsay is listening in Stockton, California, and she runs a youth program. Hi, Lindsay. Good afternoon.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I had a comment and or question. Just when I run my youth groups a lot, obviously I've heard of who Little Nas X is, and then even in some of his past stuff that he's done, like you guys mentioned. And it's always a topic of conversation and stuff. And now when these shoes have become a thing, in the back of my head when I'm listening to my young people talk about the fascination behind them or wanting to buy them and everything, I can't help but wonder, what is the role of Nike? As the larger company using the advertising and then the financial backing that they have thrown in the past towards the Black Lives Matter movement, for good or for bad, but how does that influence the culture of young people, and where do we stand as a country with our advertising and sort of where we're mixing up a lot of what used to be just, you know, what is good is now is evil, and what is evil now is the perception of good and stuff. And so it was just kind of a takeaway because I guess because I run a young program, run a youth program, I couldn't help but have empathy for Little Nas X to say that, you know, where was he led wrong, and what kind of money and other, like, vices were pushed towards him to kind of have this idea sound good. And and then I look back at the companies who are making money at our Black youth off of something like this. So that's just all I wanted.
Well, Lindsay, thanks, first of all, for what you do, and thanks for bringing up that point. Father, I have about 2 minutes for you, so I'm going to let you have the final thought for Lindsay.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I would say that, number one, Nike has distanced themselves from this. They did not promote it, and they don't condone it. I read that today for sure. So, they have renounced that. And just in terms of Little Nas, again, we don't know if what he's doing is because he is really dancing in the dark, literally with, like, direct giving himself over to the devil. We don't know that. Or if this is just more of a rebellion against Christians who are coming out in a sin, you know, the same sex or the gay lifestyle. And so we don't know what his motives are for doing this or what his, how he lives his life. But at the same time, I mean, we do know that when you give yourself over to a life of sin and serious sin, then you are opening your heart up to the bad spirit. And so in one sense, Jesus says, you know, the devil is a father of lies. And so when you give yourself over to the lies of the evil one and live according to those lies, then you're entering into some kind of relationship with him, at least indirectly. So anyway, that's kind of what I would say. And another way to think of all this stuff, you know, think of, you know, if you're talking to youth, think of it this way. Tell them that your heart has a door on it and two people are knocking at it, Jesus and the devil. And so you got to be aware of who you're going to open up the door of your heart to, and always be discerning in that way, and always, you know, yearn to want to open up that heart up to Jesus more and more. And when you do that, you will close off You'll find protection against the other knock.
Hey, Father, thank you. Always great to talk to you. Have a blessed Holy Week, okay? And
you too, Drew. God bless.
Pray for us, okay? We'll pray for you right now. We're going to pray the chaplain.
Sounds good.
All right. God bless you. It's Father Mark Barron. Do say a prayer for him. Pray for all your priests, your religious, especially for your bishops and your cardinals or the Holy Father. The church needs it. Satan is the enemy of the church. He hates it. And we see his hallmarks in so many different areas. Thank God for Relevant Radio, too, that we can bring some clarity to these types of issues and call people to prayer. When we come back, we'll pray the chaplain. I'll give you an update on the book. If you've ordered it, let me tell you what's happening, okay? That's straight ahead. Stay with me.